history, we as historians or our history enthusiasts, we shouldn't let poets write history. And we shouldn't let artists paint pictures that are supposed to be history. And so they tried real hard to sort out from the beginning, I'll just use this one, not problem. The Battle of New Orleans. A different typeface, not a problem. This is where we learned the Battle of New Orleans. Who remembers it?
Yeah.
And 1814, we took a little trip, Earl Jackson, fired our guns, and the British kept running out. It's a great song. He did other songs too, North to Alaska, things like this. We look down the river and we see the British come, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's another one that gets on about the alligators. And I want to assure you that the PETA, that's the People for the Ethical Treatment of Alligators, had nothing to do with it. But what we're talking about is the myths that have been handed down. The first one is that it was fought after the formal end of the War of 1812. Wrong. Fake news. If you read the appropriate passage from the Treaty of Ghent, it says, orders sent out to all powers cease hostilities only after ratification of the treaty by both parties. Well, think about it. This was just a few months after the British had bombarded Baltimore Harbor, hence the Star-Spangled Banner, right? The defense of Fort Henry is the original name of the book. This is not long after they burned the Capitol, which sometimes these days doesn't sound like a bad idea, but that's another thing. There was no Congress. They dispersed. The president was living in Octagon House. There was barely a functioning government to handle a treaty, even if it had been presented to them. So that's not true. So we have this really stylized, technically incorrect painting done years afterwards. Take your pick. The weapons are wrong, and they didn't have bayonet, and the uniforms are wrong. Take your pick. It's just all wrong. The other thing was, you're told that it was a final battle of the War of 1812. It was, except for the ones that came after. You notice that between one painter and another, General Jackson has changed uniforms. Now, you know about the joke of the colonel that changed his uniform partway through the battle, so he had brown pants. That's got nothing to do with this. This is another just plain inaccuracy. If anything, the first uniform is probably more correct. You notice this is the one with Andy Jackson in the background is a campaign poster from about 1828 when his hair really looked that way. They wanted it to be recognizable in his present sense. The rest of it, plus and minus, we won't get involved with it. There were other battles after this one. The most significant was Fort Bower, or Bowie. Wait a minute. We can't get away from that uniform. We like our uniforms. And we like our hats, other than when children run away from us thinking that I'm a pirate. That happens a lot with color guard. But you like their outfits. That is a hat for 1812 in action. When, as you know, the British lost the Battle of New Orleans, they had intended to take New Orleans and bottom up traffic on the Mississippi River, on the Missouri River, on the Ohio River, stop America from moving west, from manifest destiny, from coast to coast, like we were in a very good order of doing. When they lost there, they said, well, Mobile's the next best thing we can do. Let's stop the river traffic there. And they tried and lost there, too. So, no, it was not the final action. Nothing even told it was a big battle all on one day, the 8th of January. Well, it was one day. It was one day from December 14th, over a month long. one day. The reason people say one day is, yes, the big, decisive turning point in the battle was January 8th. But people were there weeks ahead of time. There were preparations weeks ahead of time, and there were skirmishes and battles and artillery duels from middle of December through this time or more into January. Don't believe one day. You've been told the battle was fought only on land because Andy Jackson, he was the hero of the Battle of New Orleans, and Andy Jackson's a soldier, and the Army is proud of their record. And this is, in fact, a very accurate. Any artillery people here? This is a survey map. This is a field survey map. They have laid out every cannon and test fired so they know the angle and the elevation and the charge to hit any particular point. They do that so they know if the enemy comes this way, dial it in and fire. You're closer to hitting them right the first time. So it was a significant battle. 8,000 to 9,000 people on the British side, less than half that on the American side. The count is kind of flimsy because there were militia and there were local people who just volunteered for the day. There were some slaves that were sent to do battle, or at least be in support. There were some local Creoles who volunteered for the day. So let's say 2,000 to 3,000, maybe more on there. How about this fighting on land, though? Here's a painting, and this is obviously from the American point of view. You can see with the ruffles, it's hard to tell. That's the Stars and Stripes, 15 stripes, not 13. And they're having a good day just blasting the British gunships out of the water, aren't they? Well, there's two points of view. Here's another painting from the British standpoint, and almost every American ship is on fire. Americans did win this battle in a lake that has since been silted in to the point that it's not navigable anymore. It's just part of the swamp in the delta there. The other part of an argument about being on land is the two people involved. That's Vice Admiral Cochrane. Cochrane is a very well-respected, proven admiral, officer of the line in the Royal Navy. Versus our Commodore Patterson. And he covered, yeah, that's him over there. Nice pose. When you hear somebody say something costs too much, it's going to cost an arm and a leg, they're talking about the price of having your portrait done. And hands are extra. Mostly you want to do the face. Hands are extra. And so Commodore Patterson either had an allowance or put his hand in it. Don't know what he's pointing at. Quite a difference in rank. A Commodore is not quite a captain or not quite an admiral anyway in our Navy versus a very senior Navy officer. Patterson doesn't get the credit that a lot of us think he deserves. He was the one who really set up the defenses before Jackson ever got there. Now, Jackson made a lot of improvements, and Jackson's engineers knew better than what a sailor officer could do. But he could set up guns, because setting up the guns is nearly the same on land. The rest of the sea battle, the river battle, is Fort St. Philip, which is still there in a matter of sorts. This photo is pre-Katrina. I can't find a post-Katrina, either that there are no photos or there is no Fort St. Philip. But it's right where it needs to be in the bend of the river. The British wanted to go past New Orleans, get upstream a little, land troops there, and come back south. They couldn't get past Fort Philip. Those people fought and fired hour on hour on hour and didn't let a single British ship get past them. Fort St. Philip. You don't hear a lot about it. It's a handsome construction of the day. It was used later on in the Civil War for a couple reasons, but no there. The one that has been handed down many, many times is how great the militia were. The Kentuckians and the boys who brought the Kentucky long rifle. Of course, we know that the Kentucky long rifle really came from Pennsylvania, but that's okay. French fries came from Belgium, and you know. We don't care about those details. They get a lot of credit. But if you look at Andy Jackson's diary of the day, he says, quote, "The Kentucky reinforcements, in whom so much reliance had been placed, ingloriously led us yielding to the enemy that most formidable position. The only place where the British really got close and even broke through the line for only a few moments and then fell back just to overwhelming numbers was the Kentuckians." Now, why would Jackson say that the day after the battle, and yet today we have this glorious reputation of the militiaman? Well, I'm sorry to have to break this to you, but sometimes when politicians are running for office, Jackson's from Tennessee. He knows he's going to carry Tennessee in the presidential election. Favorite son, right? Kentucky's right next door. He kind of wants to take Kentucky too, sweeping the whole western frontier in those states. He completely changed his story, buried his own diary, until somebody at Tulane University found it just a few years ago. So don't believe the propaganda of the Kentuckians. It was artillery and engineers that won the battle. Here's how they did it. The Rodriguez Canal, and I showed you already on the map, I should put another copy of the map there. That Rodriguez Canal runs right straight across. And like a lot of battles, we call the Battle of New Orleans. New Orleans several miles away. Not a problem. Hastings, the battle was 20 miles away. Gettysburg, the battle was 3 miles away. They just name it after the closest town they could recognize on the map. That Rodriguez Canal is about as wide as this building, and in those days, maybe 4 or 5 feet deep. It was only for hauling barges from the sugarcane fields over there to the Mississippi River, so down to sugar refineries. This is what it looks like today. It's not in use anymore, and you have to know where it is to find it because it looks like just another creek. I took this picture the best I could. It doesn't have the glory of a famous battlefield, although that is a nice double wide. Yeah. With 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 cars. Looks like where I used to live in Lower, but anyway.
I was that 300-pound trailer park woman in that picture.
The engineers trenched and dredged the canal and threw all the spoils up on the north side. That made a parapet wall and that made firing platforms for the artillery pieces. You know, Army always wants to be on the high ground looking down. Well, if there's any high ground, then build some, which I could scoop up. As I say, the water was only maybe 3, 4, 5 feet deep, something like that. But they also trenched it. Now, dredging is the length. Trenching is making a very deep, 6 or 8 foot deep trench across. Let the British watch you wade across like this. But if you're 2 or 3 feet, oh my. British end up believing the whole canal was 8 or 10 feet deep. Actually, you have to know where to cross to take a dunking for a good purpose, confuse the enemy. Didn't make much difference anyway because the British officer who was in charge of the ladders and the scaling lines forgot his equipment. Not recorded until you get the British records that they re-research. Another one, you've all heard of the famous pirate John Lafitte and how important he was to the Battle of New Orleans, and we couldn't have done it without him. And it is true that he's a great pirate, and he was only one problem, he was never there. He made a deal, or he tried to. He talked to the British. He said, "You have some of my men in prison. I'll help you in this coming battle if you'll let my men go free." Well, not Cochrane himself, not the admiral himself, but some subordinates. This is the Royal Navy, and we don't need helps from the likes of you. So Lafitte, he's in business for himself, and went to make a deal with Commodore Patterson, later confirmed with Jackson. They didn't have any prisoners to exchange, but part of the way the British treated him, he did loan them a whole lot of cannons. In fact, the biggest cannons they had were 32-pounders. A 32-pounder. Who's been to Fort Jackson, the real Fort Jackson in Savannah, not the other one in Mayotte? 32-pounder. Oh, it is a monster. And that's the one, and you see the survey map would go out there several miles if it needed to. So no, John Lafitte was never there. He did lend cannon from his ships, another cannon that he had, and he lent some. The good news is, though, that his brother is there. His brother Dominic Yule. Now he's been called brother, or he's been called half-brother. He's at least a Masonic brother. Read the symbol on his grave. This is as close you can get. There's an iron gate. You have to stick your camera through on the other side and take your picture. They don't want you to get any closer to Dominic Yule. He was the master of artillery, at least of the loaned artillery. It was their own cannon. They knew how to fire best. And they were the ones that did the most damage. Engineers picked the field up in the first place, and artillery really won the battle. I don't cover it here, but one of the minor, General Pakenham died in the battle on the 8th of January. You do know that. And it's been told those Kentucky riflemen, two of them, shot him right in the head. Wrong. It was a great shot from Dominic Yeo in the pirates in there. And I want to assure you again that no alligators were at least intentionally harmed in the Battle of New Orleans. This one, though, is another campaign poster. In fact, this is the official campaign poster. You didn't put it in your on a plastic sign in your yard in those days, but this was the official one. And you can see what a glorious battle it was, and isn't he a handsome fellow in the Battle of New Orleans, and the death of Major General Pakenham, and just great things going on. Don't know why the flags have the stripes, vertical instead of horizontal, but it's politics. What's sad is worse than history being confused or fantasized is the way it's presented in an official sense. This is a page from Georgia Advanced Placement History today. I took this picture just 2-3 days ago. This is AP. This is the supposedly the brightest kids. You know, if they score well enough on the test at the end, they're going to get college credit for it. Look what it says. Impressive but meaningless. Yes, the British are a whole lot closer to Ghent than Washington, D.C. is. Understood. Yes, the British had signed off on the treaty. But let's think about it just a little while. In fact, the news hadn't come that this treaty had been agreed to. The papers hadn't been across the Atlantic to get to D.C. if it had been there and been in functioning order. Isn't it sad that this is what we're teaching kids? It was impressive but meaningless because, and I say again, look at what the treaty really says. Only after both parties have signed. Don't you suppose, if the British had won, how long would it take for a parliamentary, an order for recall? It would have been the first. Yeah. Let's rethink this treaty again. Why? It was only 12 years before that Jefferson sent people to secure the rights to New Orleans so that we'll have passage down the Mississippi. And instead, they bought the whole place, which is a good idea, we know now. I do another whole session just about Louisiana Purchase, but the snippets I'll tell you here is it wasn't $15 million, it was 11.5. The rest is debt. It The $15 million didn't really go to do it Napoleon any good. In fact, his wife spent $5 million on clothes and jewelry. That's not a challenge to anybody here. On top of that, we borrowed the money, and where did we borrow the money from?
The Dutch.
Two banks in England. What would have happened? Oh, yeah, it got wandered, if you will, through Holland, through Jamaica, and then here, and that sort of thing. But that's where the money came from. On top of that, yes, it was $15 million grand total, but in the 12 years that we'd held the Louisiana Purchase since 1803 till this battle, the estimated worth that we had developed was approximately $150 million. 10 times your investment in 12 years. Not a bad deal, agree? Well, you know, capitalism used to be legal in this country, and it sure paid off in that case right there. So, no, don't believe that it would have been at the end. So where are we now? Well, 2 years ago, there was talk of Andy is going to get replaced on the $20 bill. And if there's anybody who would not want Federal Reserve note above his head, it's Andy Jackson. He was the most anti-federalist kind of fellow you can think. Did you know Andy Jackson in his term, his administration, paid off the national debt? I'm not speaking a foreign language. I said paid off the national debt. That's how far it is. But we did go through a while of who will we have. Well, it might take, we have to have a woman because we've never had a woman on a bill in the United States, except for this one. This is an 1891 Martha Washington dollar. And you can buy them for about $420, depending on conditions. Little John pointing people's up. That's the 1891. More rare, but still same picture with George along with her, is the 1896 dollar. It's about $520, $550. So, yes, we've had women on bills before. Same woman. Not to mention all the coins, Sacagawea, and the others. Here's the suggestions for replacing Andy. Harriet Tubman, Eleanor, Rosa, Claire Barton, Rachel Carson. Any DDT around here? Okay. Margaret Sanger. And that other lady, I don't remember. But anyway, we decided instead we're going to do the $10 bill. Somebody got all confused about which lady's going to replace it. They forgot the next bill that's got to be redone is the $10 bill. So now we're worried about which woman will we put on the $10 bill. Now, I'm a good American. I support my federal government. And selfless that I have nominated not one, but two females to go on the $10 bill. Do you want to see them? Okay. You didn't say yes, you're going to see them anyway. The first one is Logan Susanna. The second one is Emily Grace. I would send more, but I only have two granddaughters. So, I've done all I can for the federal government, and now I've done all I can for you. Thank you.